Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. The obvious major event of the day that we, I think, should be commented on is, of course, this conflict in Gaza. Quite an amazing development, actually. There's a reaction, world reaction. There's Canadian reaction. I guess the first one to mention is Joe Biden is saying he's going to send warships, several, I gather. He also says he's going to be sending munitions, which is really quite striking because about every 2 weeks we're told that everybody's running out of ammunition. Nobody has any more. It's getting low and there may not be enough for Ukraine, and they're going to have to do this and have to do that. And then they say, well, we're going to be sending a lot of munition. One feature of this that maybe has been lost track of is that the U.S. actually now has a base inside Israel, which is over the many years of Israel, there was no external power with a base inside the country, but that's a subject we should probably return to at some time, because it was remarked at the time, it's about, I think, 3 or 4 years ago now. But what we're being told is that the U.S. Has munitions there, and no doubt they're going to be passed on, or at least they want that to be seen and talked about, because this is showing material support for Israel by the U.S. The real situation, the reason we're at this moment, is the old colonial system. The model, the colonial model, is in place as it was put there by the French and the British, later the Americans. When you think about it, Israel was formed in 1948, established. And at that time, Algeria was a part of France. Algeria is now a very significant, important Arab state, once again being heard from, by the way. And indeed, following establishment of Israel, as the Algerians fought for their independence, Israel was a major ally and friend of France in trying to prevent the Algerians from winning their independence. And as you'll notice, the way this whole issue is discussed, the colonial powers are all immediately aligned with Israel, in a basically indefensible, I'm talking political terms, position, because when Israel was established, the two major powers that caused it to happen and put it in place were the United States and Russia. Yes, it had been under British authority, but the British were very much in the back seat. And when it came to saying that it was going to be recognized, the two important historical figures were Harry Truman and Joseph Stalin. At that time until now, it was understood that the Palestinian community was going to also have a state. And there's a proverb, long will the bitter morsel be chewed, because the Palestinians were never treated or recognized on an equal basis. And instead, it has all these years, the colonial powers, have worked at trying to forget that, or get others to forget, and to discourage the Palestinian people from insisting on the rights which were recognized from the beginning. I have a collection of letters by Albert Einstein, put together by Fred Jerome. It's called, the title is Einstein on Israel. And he, in his letters to powerful people at the time, he said, our first job is to align ourselves with the Arab people, the Arab nations, our neighbors, that they will have the same, that we will have mutual recognition. And we support their anti-colonial struggles. That was Albert Einstein. I'm sorry he wasn't an editorial writer and that he didn't, you know, only talk about this subject, but he was very clear about it. He was just putting his finger on the problem, and that problem remains. It's a colonial model that they're trying to, that they attempted to impose, and I would say they had a great deal of success. But it's not workable unless you're going to treat states equally and recognize their rights. We have the headlines in Canada and the United States are full of declarations about how I stand with Israel, or the Hamas or the Gaza leadership are terrorists. Well, that's, those are outbursts. That's atrocity thinking. It's trying to turn, reduce everything to who killed the most bystanders, and ignoring the political reality and rights of people, and particularly the codified ones. And if we're going to be helpful, that's where, that's, to my opinion, that's where we should put our emphasis. For example, there's two phrases that loose at the moment. One is unprovoked, which is absurd to say that the situation of the people of Gaza that might lead to their violent behavior is unprovoked, would be to deny what everyone has seen. And every human rights organization, the United Nations General Assembly, everybody has said this situation is intolerable. It is inhumane. People in living under those conditions really don't have to follow anybody's rule. They have to survive. They have the right to survive. And so the provocation is inherent. It's institutionalized. And people who speak blandly of, well, we'll just let this all go on. Well, the ones who suffer under it are not obliged to let it all go on. And when they do something, you can't say that it's unprovoked. Prisons, thousands of prisoners, Palestinian prisoners, years away from their families, separated, many without trials, everything. All kinds of terrible things. So that's one situation, one phrase that is not helpful. And it is, and the fact that it's a pattern phrase where every American senator and congressman uses the same phrase means that they're all playing off the same, writing off, working off, talking off the same playbook, whether they're in the Democratic Party, the Republican Party. And the second phrase is Israel has a right to defend itself. That's true, I suppose. But the same applies to Palestinians. So you have two entities that you can say of them, as you would have anybody logical say, of course, the Palestinians have a right to defend themselves. They would say they have a duty. All the movements that people admire over the years, and look at the Algerians I spoke of, they had a right to defend themselves. Even though de Gaulle and the French called them citizens, said, oh, not citizens, well, they had a status. They were French, part of France. And, but they were dehumanized, they were segregated, they were, and they lost a lot of people. And everybody knows, watch the Battle of Algiers. They had a right to defend themselves, to do what they could. And I would, incidentally, I would not say I know, I do not understand the tactics involved. And to say, well, this is a way to do, way to conduct a war, particularly when you have population like Gaza under the extreme conditions they live under, they invent ways to fight. And it's like, I'm sorry to say, all conflicts of any magnitude involves unpleasant choices. But the people putting all their emphasis on trying to find, make it into an issue of method or violence, who don't want to do lift a finger to end the political problem inherited from the colonial system, which has not gone away because the colonial powers have chosen a side. They regard Israel as part of the Western system. And they are dismissive of Arab voices, African voices. It's like when they killed Gaddafi, the African states, you sent a group and sent delegates and representation to stop the conflict and to also recognize that, in their view, Gaddafi was a friend and colleague of theirs, particularly Nelson Mandela, who spoke of him very highly, spoke of Gaddafi highly. But they were ignored. They were just Africans. Nobody paid any attention. And they murdered Gaddafi. The same mentality is working here with, in this case of protecting, talking all the time about protecting Israel, but not protecting Palestinians, or not insisting that the agreed upon methods to solve the problem be done, addressed. If you corner a Canadian leader, they will say, we believe in the two-state solution, the two-state solution of 1967. Which, well, then why don't they do something? And why aren't they on their feet saying, let's get off the dime and do it? But they don't. Instead, they say, we're with Israel, which is absurd. Say what should be done, address what should be done to solve this very deadly issue. A lot of people are whistling in the dark who think that one big blow, one finally showing them that they have the power to crush the Palestinians, that somehow this is gonna, no, it's not gonna happen. What this as a military matter, something has been illustrated here that the Palestinians are in no way inferior to their Israeli counterparts when it comes to intelligence, and I mean both military and straight up intelligence. An oppressed group with very little resources has really startled a state that assumes it recognizes itself as very powerful and has wonderful intelligence. That's issue number one with them. Everybody says if you have such great intelligence, how come this happened? These incursions from Gaza. Further to the background of this, people are raising, many voices are saying, what's going on? This must be Iran. It must be Russia. But actually, there's a sense in which the first point is true, in that the Shah of Iran, propped up by the United States and a quiet friend of Israel, was overthrown. And a type of leadership emerged there, which, if you go back and look, Yasser Arafat went to meet, Yasser Arafat, for the people who may not remember him, was the leader of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, a secular political body made up of various groupings. Arafat was their leader. Arafat went to see the Iranian Revolution, and the Iranian Revolution leaders said to him, we're going to cut off all oil to Israel, just as we're cutting off oil to South Africa, because we consider both of them to be colonial settler states. That was quite unorthodox, which it told you that was an actual revolution, because they didn't check in with Moscow or China or anybody else. They had their own position, and they're anti-colonial. And they said, settler states, we don't accept their existence. And actually, that was interesting, because Arafat did, in a way. He was trying to make sure everybody was happy. He was quite thrilled. But the power of what happened in what became the Islamic Republic was really exhilarating throughout the Muslim world. And the Americans decided they had to do something about it. And they began trying to develop movements, Islamic movements, to counter Iran. And that's why people, they talk about they built up the current group. The Taliban was created by the West, and they said stop Russia, but they left out somebody. It was also to stop Iran. It was to give an Islamic counterforce to Iran, because it would be based on Sunni Islam versus Shia, and the colonialists never pass up a chance to see if they can split people. And at the same time, they created Hamas. PLO was challenged by Hamas, but it wasn't Iran that created Hamas. The first backing for Hamas came from Tel Aviv, because they wanted to see if they could create a Islamic group to fight Arafat. And they succeeded in that, and now they've inherited what they created. It's an interesting parallel between what's going on, what went on in Afghanistan, and what is going on now in Gaza. I think these matters are forgotten or not noticed, but to my mind, they should be. Iran doesn't have to do anything to motivate the people of Gaza or Palestine or the Middle East, actually, because they have a problem of being dismissed and put down by colonialism, neocolonialism. And there is a movement in the world, clearly. Some people call it multipolar world. I guess that's right. But, for example, in the case of Syria, the United States knocked over Libya, according to John McCain, Victoria Nuland, Biden, Obama, and Clinton, they were going to overthrow Assad in Syria. They didn't do it. And that also strengthened the Arab cause, because the whole idea was to beat up the Arabs and make them compliant to the colonial order. But anti-colonialism is getting stronger. And the solution is still right in front of us. On the matter of the Russians and solving the problem, some people are not happy with them because they always return to the same point. They say this matter can be resolved by the agreement, which was struck in 1967. By the way, I don't know if they're right, but that's what they say. I mean, if true in the facts, whether this opportunity to do the right thing is any longer viable, we'll have to wait and see. But one point that the Russians make that I think is very pertinent is that they say, everyone forgets that when they made the 19, they said they're going to implement the 1967 agreement, the way to do it was through a quartet. It wasn't through Washington, which always likes to, everything has to go through Washington, or it did. I can't remember. Now times are changing, so maybe it has to go through Moscow. But what Russia said is that the quartet was made up of the United States and Russia as the two principal countries. And I remind you, Harry Truman and Joe Stalin were the original guys. So it was United States, Russia, and I think it's the UN. It's no other country. It's just international institutions, two international institutions, but it's Russia and the United States. What Russia says now is that that has been blocked. And this was at the time it was blocked because the United States decided when they didn't like Putin anymore, and this goes way back. We're not talking 2014 in Ukraine now. We're talking about America decided they didn't want any longer to have Russia involved in things, even though the quartet was established by the United Nations. And it was the Security Council agreed the quartet would handle the implementation of the agreement of the two states. So Russia says that the United States is blocking and doesn't want them involved, which means it can't be addressed, which means that people will fight each other and they will solve the problem on their own between them with whatever parties choose to join in. And everybody better pray that that phenomenon doesn't get out of hand. But it should be mentioned here that there's supposed to be a quartet. It's not a U.S. issue. When Joe Biden says, oh, I'm sending things, well, he's a member of the quartet. Did he ask Russia about that? Obviously, if the two would talk, the message would go down the line, or, okay, this is serious, now we're going to solve this. But the U.S. is actually playing a dirty game and allowing all this ugliness to unfold. So I think we have to say to the Canadian government, your voice should be there. You should say there's a solution and we're going to work on the solution. Don't be putting your hand up saying, oh, I'm with this side. You're not with a side. You're supposed to be for justice. Palestinians deserve justice. And you're for those things which you signed on to. And you say it to the parties. But what we're actually getting is this stupid sideshow of basically feckless, useless politicians who really only want the picture taken to be recorded as having, I'm with this gang or I'm with that. That is a disgusting international phenomenon that we have to deal with. I have to note a political thing that I've spoken about on the show previous. That is the political scene in the United States where the Green Party nominated Cornel West to be their guy. And last week, he decided he wasn't their guy anymore. And by mutual agreement, the Green Party and him waved at each other. And now they say he's an independent candidate. And this is the second group he's quit because Lord only knows why. But as we've said on the Taylor Report, that we wouldn't follow that guy across the street. For one thing, he wouldn't get across the street because he'd turn and go back. He described the Palestinians, Gaza breakout, you would call it, as barbaric. And I notice that all the air is going out of his balloon. He has said previous, and I don't know why people don't remark on this. One of the things we're trying to say about the West and Canada and the United States is that every time they label somebody like China for something, or Iran, Islamic Republic, we shouldn't chase after them and say, oh, yes. But Cornel West, people say he's a socialist and he wants to be a president. Let's pretend he wants to be president, and let's pretend he had a chance, which he doesn't. But he spoke of the leader of Russia as a gangster, very casually. That isn't leadership. If he's actually wanting to become a president, what you say is, I would talk to the leader of that country, happens to be Mr. Putin, and I would put to him propositions that he would probably agree to, because I'm going to be reasonable about it, and we'll solve this problem, we'll solve that problem. But you don't say of that person, he's a gangster, because what that means is he's not going to talk to you. Or if he does, nothing happy is going to happen. He also described China. He spoke of China saying, I stand with my dear, my beloved, he always talks that way, Uyghur brothers, Muslim Uyghur brothers who are oppressed by China. Well, see, I think the term for that, that's not presidential to talk like that. He's never been there. He hasn't the faintest idea what he's talking about. And you're not going to get to first base as a socialist who wants to get along in the world and have less conflict if you talk so stupidly. And he also spoke of the Islamic Republic when there was a kind of orange revolution phenomenon around a woman who had died while in custody, but there's no, and it was said that she was beaten by the, what they call them, it's a made up word here, you know, basically thought police or dress police or something. There's no evidence that that happened. And we were told that now we have a broad, wide protest going on in Iran. This was about a year ago. And we were going to, and it was going to overthrow the government of Iran. And Cornel West joined in, and he called it a malocracy, and said that the only reason that the movement wasn't more successful is that the media weren't doing enough to expose the leaders of the Islamic Republic. So again, if he would look around the world, China and Russia and Iran are not actually isolated. They're not, the United States and Cornel West don't control opinion about them in the world. In the world, they're popular. I just mentioned, without lifting a finger, the Islamic Republic is very influential in the Middle East because they staked out a position of saying we're against settler states. And they do say, they said to Arafat, if you want to talk to the Israeli leaders, you go ahead. And if you want to make a deal with them, that's your business. But we don't agree. That position resonates. But at any rate, to go back to Cornel West, I think this is actually an indication of how soft and confused anybody in the American political scene who calls themselves left and socialist, if you're backing him, you're backing neocolonialism. He has the brain of a neocolonialist. He, with his remarks, he indicates he would make trouble for three rather powerful countries. Actually, I could think of others where he said similar things, which, in other words, he's not part of the anti-colonial movement. He's a rhetorician, and he said, bombastically talks about all kinds of things, but his opinions would derail any possibility of a strong anti-colonial movement. So, lastly, and if I'm right, I think I've covered quite a bit of time on this matter. We come to Canada, where every politician here has the mantra of unprovoked attacks, which is an insult to the Arab people and to the Palestinians. And then the labeling of the actions as criminal or horrific, and making statements of solidarity with Israel. I when they actually, as I said before, they had to take a principled position and say, we want a solution, and we know Palestinians are in an oppressed situation on the West Bank and Gaza. Just say it. They're not Palestinians, they're not Israelis, so they could, but say what you know, but they won't do that. Canoe, the leader of in Manitoba, went out of his way to make statement. And Mr. Singh, and right across the board, and which is that they marginalize themselves, they basically taking neocolonialist positions, Western positions, the world of what they call it, rule of law people. And frankly, I think most Canadians are going to reject this and are going to laugh at it. And they're going to be more emphatic now. And each, as years go by, the desire to see the Palestinians recognized and equals in a state and in the world is going to be affirmed by most Canadians and Americans in the West, and it's already affirmed in the global South, as they call it, and in the East. They're already ahead on points on that score. Just notice the General Assembly, UN General Assembly votes. It's a closed case. There's nothing Bob Rae can do about it. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT. We're going to take a break, and we're going to talk about developments with the United Auto Workers and Unifor and the Big Three. And we're back. It is the Taylor Report. Before we speak to Tony Lee, I want to just mention that I urge people to check out Chris Hedges has an excellent article about the Gaza matter and the electronic intifada is very eloquent and quite passionate. I really recommend. And then there is the brilliant journalist Charmin Narwani. Charmin Narwani, if you just put her name in, she's based in Beirut and is very much up to date. And she's the editor of a wonderful journal called The Cradle. An editor, I shouldn't call it the editor. Charmin Narwani. And one little small note, people may not know, the People's Front for the Liberation of Palestine, a Marxist-Leninist organization of long-standing, used to be an old rival of Yasser Arafat, are participating in this armed activity alongside Hamas. And I can't explain that at all.